On this episode of the iFilmmaker Podcast, 5 things I wish I had known before starting a video production company. Welcome back to another episode of the iFilmmaker Podcast. My name is Ariel Martinez. Glad you guys can join us on this episode. We have Jackson Kingsley on. I had a great conversation with him. Jackson Kingsley is a documentary filmmaker. Very talented individual. He's from the UK. So he's working with local and international brands such as Animal Planet, National Geographic, Discovery Channel, Red Bull, BBC, and he's also won some awards for his films. So needless to say, the guy is talented. He knows what he's doing. So we were able to sit down with him and have a nice conversation. And he shares the 5 things that he wish he had known before starting a video production company. Now, this was extremely exciting for me because I was very interested in what someone of his stature and his talent had to say about that. And I definitely learned a few things on this episode, and I know that you guys will too. So I want to get to that in just a second. I want to let you guys know that this episode was not live on YouTube just because he was actually in Portugal when we recorded it, and it was an unstable internet connection, and I didn't want to have to go live and then cut and whatnot and deal with all that. So we just decided to record it separately and kind of put it out. But that doesn't mean you can't still see the video. The video is still going to be available. We just simply recorded it separately. That'll be up on YouTube as well, over on the iFilmmaker YouTube page. And I want to also let you know that Jackson Kingsley is not only a extremely talented documentary filmmaker that, you know, gets fantastic clients and fantastic work. He is also an educator. He also has his own course on business mastery. So that's the name of the course, but it's basically showing and kind of revealing all of his secrets on how he was able to build his business, how he was able to scale his business, what he was able to charge, and getting all the clients. And he has an entire course put together on everything he did to kind of get to where he's at now. So that's a pretty amazing, amazing thing that he had put that together. You can find his course. I'm putting a link to that course on the show notes for this episode. Now, disclaimer, I am getting a commission for this, so I did ask Jackson to give me a link for you guys, and this is actually you're getting a better price specifically for my listeners. But either way, it's worth it to click the link because it'll take you to like a 40-minute webinar where he is showing just a ton of information, and I was able to sit down through that, and it's just so valuable. So even if you don't purchase his course, it's valuable just to go and check that out. And you know, at the end he'll kind of show you the whole value of everything, but he just gives you a ton of information through that webinar. So I would recommend that you do it. But yeah, in addition to that, I do get a commission, and it does help me as well, and at no extra cost for you. It's actually cheaper for you guys when you use that link. So I'm going to have the link to that on the show notes for this episode. It should be linked right there. If you're on iTunes, on Spotify, or any other platform that you're listening to this, you should see that link right there. Or you could just go to iFilmmakerPodcast.com, click on the link for this episode, and you'll have the link for that there as well. I think that covers all of the introductions. And so here's my conversation with Jackson Kingsley. Jackson Kingsley, thank you so much for coming on the iFilmmaker Podcast. I know that you're super busy and these are crazy times right now, but I appreciate you taking the time to coming on and sharing some knowledge with us.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you inviting me. It's awesome to be here.
So I guess we can just get started with your background, where you're from, and I guess your background, how you got started in the industry of video production.
Yeah, sure. I'm originally from the UK, but I'm actually stuck out in Portugal at the moment because of the coronavirus. But to give you a little backstory about me, I started in film and TV production about 10 years ago, originally as a camera assistant, and then I started my own business. I worked as a shooting producer director for a long time. I worked with Animal Planet, and recently, well, a few years ago, I got a documentary with National Geographic. And then most recently, I've been working on a production with a friend of mine who's trying to break the world speed record on a snowboard. But that's sort of been put on hold with the whole corona situation. Alongside all of that, I also teach, and I run a course called Video Business Mastery. So I think you got in touch because you saw my most recent video on YouTube, and I've been trying to share awareness and help people, help other video creators with setting up and running their businesses, and in particular with the challenges of landing clients and charging higher rates.
That's always an invited talent to learn. Everyone wants to know how to get more clients, get better clients, make more money doing so. But yeah, you're right. I saw your video on five things I wish I'd known before starting my, you know, video production business.
Yes.
Found it very interesting. Very interesting. And that's what I want to talk about today. So I guess for those that are starting off, and even, you know, I feel like it applies to even those that have already started and might need to kind of do some sort of U-turn or maybe curve their model a little bit, reconstruct their entire method or approach. I guess let's start with number one. What is the first thing that you wish you had known?
Sure, yeah. So the first thing that I brought up was that you can't differentiate yourself simply by creating great looking content. I believe that was the first one.
Yes.
And I do believe that a lot of video creators, a lot of people get into video production because they love creating. They love the visual side of it and the aesthetics. And as a result, we're now in a situation where there's a really oversaturated market of people who are producing great looking content. But as a business, that's not the way to differentiate yourself anymore. So what I'm getting at in the video is that results are the way to differentiate. So you were going to say something.
Yeah, that, I feel like when I first heard that one was a big bomb. Like, you started the video off very strong because it's almost a bummer. Because, and I've said this before, you know, one of the problems that we had back in the day was that to get access to professional grade video production equipment, you'd have to be either funded by Hollywood or just have to be some sort of millionaire to be able to afford that kind of stuff. Now we have that kind of technology even in our pockets, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
You can get great looking content with just about, and I talk about a lot about video, the quality of these new cameras that are coming out. I'm a big gearhead, so I talk a lot about video quality and whatnot, lenses, lights, audio, etc. But now that's super normal. That's like, it's like you say, it's already expected. If you buy a $500, even my A6300 that I don't even use anymore, it's really my webcam now, but I can still go out and make great looking content with that camera. So if you can expand a little bit with what you mean by results. Right. So it's not the quality, it's the results.
Sure. So when we talk about the creative, we're talking about things like image quality, resolution, maybe like bit depth, more advanced things like that. And those are the kind of things that are going to go over the top of a client's head. And ultimately, you want to be steering the conversation more towards tangible business results, things like return on investment, revenue and profit. And that's the language of business owners. Those are the things that the businesses that you want to land as clients, that's the kind of language that they're going to understand best. One of the key...
Yeah, I'm sorry, I thought you were done. Go ahead.
I was just going to add that one of the key things is that video is an incredibly powerful tool. And not just visually, but in terms of what it can do for businesses and the way it can change people's minds. It can build a brand, it can destroy a brand. It has so much potential, and by using the right language with clients and by focusing on results, you can tap into that.
That is, I mean, it's so true. And even us as filmmakers and videographers, we expect the same results as well. I mean, we want to have those conversations that involve really making more money, right? Like, it really doesn't matter how you make it. You just need to make that money. And you know, sometimes we think that the quality is all that matters. I for sure have thought like that in the past. But yeah, it's really the results. And you know, to go even a step further, personally, I think the results are, you know, it comes with a great story that is told through that video that you make. Yes. But that's like gets a little more specific. That gets a little more specific with the actual production of it. So that's great. That's the first thing you wish you had known.
Yeah.
Is there any more to that? Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I think everyone can, as video creators, we can all relate to those times when we've seen people who are producing exceptional quality work, but they're just not making any money from it. Or there are people who are producing, you know, stuff shot on an iPhone that they're charging 10, 20, 30 grand upwards for, but it's because they're positioning themselves as a video specialist, someone who can work on strategy and results for the client. So there's a big difference between the two.
Yeah, I've seen some huge numbers come out of people that are producing stuff on phones.
Yeah.
And I'm talking more specifically like Instagram stuff, people that are just making a killing on social media only, where brands and companies want to get behind that. So that's very eye-opening.
Yeah.
Very eye-opening. So what's number two?
Yeah, number two, I believe that was that you need to be speaking to business owners every day. And this is an interesting one because now we're in the current climate. With coronavirus, and the natural tendency is to kind of withdraw, and it feels very easy just to not be speaking to clients, to sit back and wait for everything to pass. And I think that's very much the wrong approach. More so than ever right now, we need to be taking the opportunity to talk to as many of our clients as possible so that we keep building rapport. All good businesses are built on good relationships. I think that would be the number one sort of piece of advice that I like to try and instill in people, is that the quality of a business is determined by the quality of its relationships.
Wow. Do you have any, I guess, tips on how to approach clients in a more productive manner? I guess, how do you kind of approach clients? How do you send out that initial email to let your clients know that you're thinking about them, that, you know, we're still in business, you know, whatever it is, kind of remind them that you're still there?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. That's one of the big challenges that people face. But I would say that the best relationships are like relationships with your friends. And a lot of the best clients that I've had over the years, I pretty much consider friends. So one of the things would be that rather than emailing them, I tend to pick up the phone and start a conversation that way. It just feels a lot more human. I feel like they get more out of it. And you can work on building the trust and rapport with those clients. And you're just staying fresh in their mind. You know, you're positioning yourself as the go-to person, the go-to expert. So whenever they need video advice, because you've been on the phone to them recently, they know that you're there for them.
Super interesting. That's good. And how did you come to that realization? Like, were you always in the habit of speaking to your clients? Where did that come from?
Yeah, so it's been a bit of a journey in that sense. I think when I first started out, I was really focused on the quality and the creation of good content. And as a result, I really had my head deep in the business, in the creative side of it. And I consider myself a bit of an introvert, so I didn't make the effort to go and speak to clients every day as I should have been. Instead, what I did when I first started my business was I hired a salesperson. And that really helped. That helped gain some traction and build up a portfolio to begin with. But I wasn't practicing those important people skills and building those relationships that I needed to in order for the business to really grow. So there was a time a few years into my business when I got a mentor, and he really taught me the importance of having that connection with the customer, with the client. So I've tried both, and I can say now that really it's the one thing that's really enabled my business to grow, is being there to talk to the clients and help them and keep that connection alive.
Wow. And so this next one, that's two already. This next one, I feel like it could be subjective, but it's do your best creative work first thing in the morning, right?
Yeah.
I think some people are more like myself. I think I do more work at night because it takes me a little while to wake up. But can you go into a little bit into that one? And I think the concept is true, though. I do think that the concept is true. If you could go ahead and explain that one.
Yeah, I think that's the key, is to focus on the concept. Some people are morning people, some people are night people.
Yeah.
And like, I get asked a lot about time management and good ways to organize your day and how can you be most productive. And for me, it's just been the realization that I just get all my productive work done first thing in the morning. So getting up at 5, 6 a.m. and working sort of 3 to 5 hours straight on one creative task without any distractions has just been so helpful. The time after, say, 9, 10 a.m., you're just going to be inundated with emails and phone calls and all sorts of distractions. And it's so easy just to go day after day without giving the time you need to those tasks that you know are really important, but you kind of, they're not urgent important. They're long-term important, but not immediately important. And those are the tasks that are really going to help you grow your business. So I think if you can set time aside, whether that's first thing in the morning or for you, you know, yeah, last thing at night, then you just really make sure that you get the important stuff done.
Really? So okay, so I guess you could, that one's supposed to be time management then, right?
Yeah, well, I think for me, like I said, it's in the morning where I'm most effective.
And okay.
A lot of people right. say that they're most effective in the evening, but I'd give them a nudge to say, give it a try in the morning, you know? I think it makes a difference, because I consider myself a bit of a night owl as well. But yeah. By waking up and not having any other distractions, just being completely fresh, I think that's when I get my most productive work done, and I place a bet that most people would as well.
When you say most productive, do you mean creatively or do you mean administration wise?
Definitely creatively. Yeah, I feel okay. like a lot of the administration work in a business can be done pretty much any time of the day. I mean it's right. it's easier done when other businesses are awake, if it's phone calls and emails and things. So obviously that kind of yeah. nine to five period works pretty well yeah. for that kind of stuff. But the creative tasks are much better when you don't have those distractions.
Yeah, I mean, that is very true. One rule that I try to uphold, even though I'm breaking it right now, but one rule that I try to uphold is not having my phone with me while I'm trying to work.
Because yeah, that's a big one.
The social media, whether it's YouTube or Instagram, is such a vortex, and it'll suck you in, and before you know it, you've just spent 2 hours throughout the whole day just going in on social media and kind of not even being productive on social media, because I do post a lot on social media for, you know, I guess for work, sometimes for this podcast and whatnot, but sometimes it's just browsing, yeah. browsing around. That is so true, having those distractions. I can definitely relate to the part where you said that, you know, the little things that you think are not important in the short term, like answering emails, are actually very important in the long run. And that might relate to your second point, to the second thing you wish you had known, which is that communication and talking to having business communication with your clients and whatnot.
Yeah.
I think that's very true and very, very helpful.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess I can definitely give it a try trying to be creative in the morning. It's just, yeah.
Well,
you know,
you've got your podcast. I mean, you've clearly got a good sense of time management. You're doing something right to be able to fit that into your day as well. So, yeah, that's good.
Yeah. It definitely gets me out of my comfort zone. And that's actually very true. Even for your second point, talking to people, you mentioned that you're an introvert, right? Mm. It had to get you out of your comfort zone to proactively approach your clients and talk to them because it doesn't make you comfortable. And I think that that's true with any aspect of business, right?
Yeah.
If you stay in your comfort zone, you're going to be comfortable, but you're going to stay comfortable. I think that, you know, when you make sacrifices...
I think not just for business, but I think for personal growth and as a general rule for life. If you push yourself outside your comfort zone every day, if you do one thing, then I think that just leads to feeling more fulfilled and like you challenged yourself and you're pushing yourself more. I think it's good all around.
That's good. That's fantastic. So let's go ahead and move on to number four, which I have here as hire your weaknesses.
Yes. Yeah, it's a big one. I mentioned before that I hired a salesperson early on in my business career, and I realized very quickly, as I said, I'm a bit of an introvert, that doing the sales side of the business wasn't something that came naturally to me, and particularly the cold outreach, speaking to someone who I'd never spoken to before and talking about myself is something that never came naturally. And so for me, the way to get around that to begin with was to hire someone who could do that. And it made a huge difference. Just even if you are good with people and you're comfortable doing the cold outreach, I think it's safe to say that you don't have unlimited hours in the day. So there are a lot of benefits to hiring and filling in your weaknesses. But I think more so than anything is to be able to manage your time more effectively and to be able to avoid those really time intensive tasks. So the second person that I employed and to fill in my other weakness was an editor. And I'm sure most video creators can relate to how time consuming editing is and how much of a challenge that ends up being, even if you enjoy it. I mean, what about you?
My editing takes so much time. I actually don't really do too much editing these days. I think that on a subconscious level, I was really pushing to only be shooting a lot and doing cinematography and whatnot. And as a result, I'm just about all of my jobs are these days, it's only shooting and giving the footage to my clients. And I personally enjoy it because there isn't that post-production stress, and I can just fill up my schedule with only shooting gigs and just deliver footage the entire time. Not to say that I can't edit or not to say that I'm not willing to edit, but I don't know. I haven't purposely kind of conveyed that message though to my clients. It's just most of my clients that come are just really needing a lot of, you know, footage, I guess, and you know, they need the FS7 camera, they need the shoot or whatever camera, I can go rent it. They need kind of a someone that can do it all, I guess, in production, because that's usually how I sell myself as a one-man band. I'm not typically hiring an audio guy or a gaffer and whatnot. I could, and I have, but most of the time I'm on my own or with a PA that I'm with.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, that's my own. I kind of like that method. kind of like that method where there isn't that much post and I don't have to worry about that too much, where I can come back after a long day of shooting and just relax.
I agree.
Maybe after I back up the footage. So that brings me to a question that I'm pretty sure a lot of people are probably going to ask. How did you go about hiring? I mean, if I could hire somebody today, I would, you know. did you have capital to start off? Did you have some sort of commission-based hire that, you know, for every sale that they made on a project, they get a certain percentage? How did that come about?
It was a bit of a mixture of everything to begin with. So,
oh, really? Okay.
I didn't pay myself, or I paid myself as little as I possibly could in the early days of my business, and almost everything went to my salesperson to motivate him and get things moving. And then there was also a commission structure on top of that. So it was very difficult to begin with, and hiring people is a challenge. But I was lucky in the beginning in that I knew some people who were very good at sales. And so if you know anyone in your close networks, that's always the first place to try. You know, whether you're looking to hire someone or whether you're looking for clients, you know, I think people always overlook how valuable their personal networks and the contacts that they have already can be.
So when you hired somebody, they had to have obviously a background in sales. But did they also have to know the industry, your industry?
So, yeah, for the first person who I hired didn't have much experience of the industry. So I've always had this sort of principle with hiring that it's more important that a person is a good fit for the company rather than having the necessary skills, because skills can always be taught. But changing someone who they are inherently and making them a good fit for the company, that's near impossible. You've got to find someone who's a good fit, and then the skills can be taught.
That's good. That's good. Yeah.
It's a huge benefit if they have the skills already, obviously. And you know, if they have an understanding, then it can put you miles ahead. But there's also a little flip side to that. There's a caveat, which is that sometimes if people are very experienced in an industry already, they'll be quite set in their ways. So if you were to hire someone in the early stages of your business and you wanted to mold them to work the way that you work and understand things in a similar way, then you may actually be better off hiring someone who's fairly fresh and new to your industry, just because they will be more moldable, they'll be more adaptable and willing to learn.
Yeah, that's definitely a good tip on that one, because you don't want people kind of injecting their own method that might not even be your method into their sales pitch, right? And then you have a client that's expecting something that they're not going to get.
Yeah, it can cause a lot of friction in a company.
I bet. So how did you go about the model? I know I had mentioned, like, you said it was a mixture of both with regards to hiring this person. Did you set some sort of quota for them to meet, right? Because I can't imagine you keep them employed if they're not making any sales.
Exactly. The KPIs for a salesperson, key performance indicators, are hugely, hugely important. However, one of the lessons that I could pass on is that when I first started in my business, I set those KPIs to go for quantity over quality. And that was a big mistake, particularly in video production, in that we were turning a lot of clients around. We were going for as many as we could on a monthly basis. But that meant our attention to detail and the time that we spent with each client wasn't that good. And sort of 7 years later, I'd say that now my focus couldn't be further on the opposite, which is focusing entirely on quality. And I would much rather have 3 or 4 clients a year who meet my revenue quota, who give me really rewarding work that I enjoy, rather than having to deal with 20, 30, 40 different clients. Yes. Just because of the amount of work that's involved in each and every one. I think one of the challenges of video production is that every project takes a fixed amount of time, or a minimum amount of time, regardless of how well it's paid. So if a gig is paying $500 or it's paying $5,000, there's still going to be a set amount of work involved in the landing the client, doing the admin, the invoicing, the shooting, the editing. So the actual amount of time required from you for each project doesn't really vary all that much. So I think that's a really good argument to focus on quality over quantity.
Yeah. You got my mind thinking now. Would that depend on the nature of the work that is being requested? Or I guess for you, I mean, unless it's all documentary, right? Because I can't imagine if it's heavy VFX in that project, that kind of changes the tables a little bit, right?
Yeah, I think for you, if, as you said, it sounds like you're working as a shooting producer director at the moment, the all-in-one solution. And I imagine you'll be wanting to get as many gigs as you can to keep you busy day in, day out, but well-paying gigs. But
right.
I think the same principle still applies in the sense that you'd probably rather be dealing with only a small handful of clients who give you all of that work rather than 10 or 20 different clients where there's so much more time involved in the management and the oversight of the projects and all of that. There's a lot more that can go wrong.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, look, if it was up to me, the first person that I would hire, I mean, what I do is first person that I hire on any given gig is a PA just to help me with all my gear.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I'll probably get audio is the second because I'll deal with the camera and I don't have to worry about that. Let them handle that. And then after that, maybe lighting, right?
Yeah.
But no, yeah, I definitely agree with that part because I can be getting so much more work than I currently do if I just drop my prices, you know, if I was charging what I was charging when I first started. It's funny because I had a conversation with my parents. My parents actually run a business completely out of the production, video production. They do taxes for truck drivers, which is very, you know, very, very specific. But, you know, they got a lot of business. They get a ton, like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of clients. But then, you know, they struggle a lot with these clients with bad attitudes and this and that. And some of them don't pay, some of them do, whatever. And I told them, do not, you need to get rid of those clients that are just giving you a hard time. And they're not giving you your money's worth with regards to just giving you, with regards to the work that you're doing, you know, like, spend the time and take care of your good clients that are paying you always on time, right? And two things are going to happen. You're going to make less money. I mean, I'm sorry, you're going to lose clients, but you're going to have a lot more time to focus on your good clients.
Absolutely.
But then what that's going to do, though, those good clients are going to refer you to other good clients, right? Yeah. So yeah, you might make less money in the beginning, but focusing on only good clients. Now, this might be, it's kind of the same and different in this end because I think we're both working with businesses. We're not working with individuals. But it kind of still applies, right? So you have, in our terms, we have less work, but we have good work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
I think the way that I would approach it is the 80-20 rule. Also known as the Pareto principle, which is the idea that 80% of the results come from 20% of the input. In this case, it's the clients. So most likely 20% of your clients are producing 80% of the work, and the other 80% could probably be sort of moved out the way and make room for higher quality clients that, you know, ultimately enable you to grow your business.
That's good. That's good. So it brings us to your last point. What is the last thing, the fifth thing you wish you had known before you started?
Absolutely. The last one was find out what's working and double or triple down on it. And this really stems from, I think, my lack of focus in the early years of my business, in that I was always starting one thing and before I'd really finish it and make the most of it, I'd just move on to the next thing. And I think this is something that a lot of people, a lot of creatives in particular, suffer from. And we just want to get as many projects going as possible. But when we stop and pause for a minute and really think about what's working within the business, we got an opportunity to say, well, hang on a sec. So this is actually producing most of the results. And you could apply the 80-20 rule here. So you look at what 20% of things within your business is actually working well, and then double or triple down on that, rather than moving on to a new project and doing all the hard work all over again. So for example, a lot of people are always trying to land new clients, but actually you've done the hard work with a lot of your existing clients. So there's actually not all that much sense in going and landing new clients when you can be developing new projects and ideas with existing clients. You've done the legwork already. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, you've already built a relationship with that. I mean,
exactly.
Unless you hire somebody to start other projects and start applying your other rules.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, that's another thing is you could be saying, for example, well, it's worked really well hiring a salesperson, so let's hire another one. Or the editor is doing particularly well on part-time, so let's double, triple down on the editor, make him full-time or hire another editor. And you're double, tripling those results on the back end, so you then have more time to focus on the important things in the business. And for example, one of the huge benefits of getting an editor in is that by freeing up the time, you're not working so much in the business, but you can really begin working on the business. And then you can really start to think about the things like, what can I double, triple down on? What's working? What's not? But that mindset to be in that position sort of requires you to have gone through that process of finding out what's working, what's not, and hiring and filling in your weaknesses and going through the steps.
It's a lot of trial and error, seems like. Kind of have to figure that out on your own. It'd be rare to find the right formula at the beginning.
It can be. It can be difficult to begin with if you don't have the guidance. And I think it's one of the things that I mentioned before, that when I found my first mentor, really started fast-tracking my results. Because when you're working with someone who has been there and done that, then you've kind of got a cheat sheet. You've got someone who can say, yeah, well, don't do this, give this a try. If you go in this direction, you're going to get these results. And having that level of experience and guidance is a great way to skip all the trial and error.
Would you say that, and I know we've already mentioned all five of them, but would you say that finding some sort of mentor should be something that you do also?
Yep, I don't want to go and directly plug my course and what I do here.
Do it! I was going to plug it at the end anyways, but go ahead.
Appreciate that. But I do really strongly believe that having someone who can guide you, and in my experience, the mentors made such a huge difference to my development and my progress, that I think everyone should find a mentor. Whoever that is, find someone who you want to emulate, who's been where you want to be, who's doing what you want to do, and ask them for guidance. Find out what worked for them and what didn't. You know, invite them for a coffee even, and just pick their brains for an hour. Because that's how it started with me. That's how I got my first mentor, was a simple conversation over a coffee, which led to 5+ years of exponential business growth as a result.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I've mentioned it several times. When I started, I had extreme jibs. My friend Ricardo, we went to the same church, but he was already in the high-end production world, doing some high-end videos for all the biggest artists out there, you know, Pitbull, yeah, Shakira, Lenny Kravitz, like just making all these fantastic work. But he's a jib operator, and that's what he focuses on. He owns his own jibs, and he only took me in. He started hiring me as his PA, but so that I can learn. And that's how I literally saw. I didn't go to film school, so that was my film school. I started. It's funny because on set, after I'm done helping him, I would just wander around, start bothering the DP, start bothering the director or gaffers or whatnot, the audio guys. Just tons of questions on set.
Yeah.
If anyone is doing that, do it appropriately while you're not rolling and not in the middle of the.
But do it. It's so important.
Yeah. So yeah, it was just a whole bunch of. I was able to learn a lot through that. And it was through that where I learned a lot of on-set etiquette, the do's and don'ts, you know, when you're working with a big production crew and whatnot. So that was very, very, very helpful for me. And even then, like, working on my own, the PAs that I hire are usually the people that want to learn. So yes. I get a lot of messages like that as well, people that live in the area that want to come on set with me for free. But I never have anybody on set with me for free. I never allow that. Like, if they want to come, they can come be my PA and I'll hire them.
Yeah.
I don't like having people work for me for free. But either way, I think that's super, super important, super...
Yeah, you made an interesting point there about the traditional film industry. When you go to work on, say, TV dramas, feature films, they've got a structure there which has been working for many years now, which is that you come in at the bottom and you work your way up to the top, but you're effectively getting mentored each stage of the process. Yeah. You go in as a runner, then say assistant camera, first assistant, and you're having one person above you guide you and mentor you. But nowadays, with video production as it is now, it's so easy just to go and buy a camera and set up a business, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it does mean that you can just end up without the kind of guidance and the expertise and the input that would really help the business grow.
You can totally expect to like bump your heads a lot more times if you're your own than you would have if you had a mentor, for sure.
Absolutely.
100. And it's not only just having a mentor, listening to your mentor. So like someone that has been there before has already bumped their head and is telling you that for a reason. It's almost like a parent, kind of.
Yeah. Oh yeah, but yeah, that definitely makes sense to listen to them as much as you possibly can, absorb all of the knowledge.
Absolutely. Jackson, thank you so much. Can you go ahead and let everyone know where they can find your work, where they can find your masterclass, and just find you and send you messages and whatnot?
Of course, yeah. So I'm running a free training session at the moment, which is 40 minutes where I packed in as much value as I possibly can on all things related to the business side of video production. And if you go to videobusinessmastery.com, you can find out all about it. You can get the free training and you can see the course that I made there too. And if you wanted to get in touch with me directly about anything, my email is jackson@fivedayfilm.com.
Perfect. I'm gonna make sure I put a plug to all of those, a link to all that on the show notes for this episode over at ifilmmakerpodcast.com. And you can find all of Jackson's work. And dude, thank you so much for coming on and spending some time here. I know that you were super busy during the shutdown over in is it Portugal, right?
Yeah, in Portugal. Yeah, I really appreciate you taking the time as well, because it's been great. Absolutely. Really good talking to you.
Thanks, man. So there you have it. That's my episode with Jackson Kingsley. I hope you guys found that extremely informative as I have. I can tell you one thing, I definitely am going to rethink a few of my methods, perhaps start doing some creative work in the morning, as Jackson challenged me to. I think that is good to try new things. Maybe you never know, maybe you find something that you didn't know before in terms of time management and whatnot. So it's always helpful to get with other creatives and learn their methods to see what works and sticks with you and what doesn't. And that's how you grow. That's how you get more experience. Just a reminder, I am putting all the links to everything mentioned here, whether it's Jackson's work. I'm also putting his business mastery course, a link to that over on the show notes for this episode. That link also will give you a special discount for his course. I take advantage of that because remember, you don't have to purchase this course, but you can sit through his 40-minute webinar and just still learn a ton of information. Jackson is extremely talented. He has a lot of information to offer, and I highly recommend that you guys do that, even if it's just to sit through and get some free info. That's always an invited gift. So I hope you guys check that out. And you know, supporting him also supports me over here on this end, so I appreciate that in advance. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. I think it was a really good one. It was a very beneficial one. And I would love to know your feedback. Let me know over in the comments over at ifilmmakerpodcast.com. Let me know in the comments for this episode what you guys thought, what you didn't like, what you liked, etc. So let me know there. So with that being said, I will see you guys on the next episode on the iFilmmaker Podcast. My name is Ariel Martinez.